Well, we're in Galatians chapter 5, the second half, starting in verse 16. If you have your Bibles, turn there. It's a very familiar passage, but in some ways a very difficult passage because it talks about two lists of things as we look at it in just a moment. It talks about a list of vices, things that we shouldn't do, sins, one of which was mentioned by Oksana in her testimony, the sin of drunkenness. And Paul lists out about 15 sins in it. We'll look at it in just a minute. And at the end of that list, he goes, and there are more, or such as these. He gives us the list as a representation of more sins, as if Paul's saying, I can't list them all, I'm just going to list some of them. And then the second list he does, a verse or two later, is a list of virtues called the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, and we'll go over that in just a minute. At the end of that, he doesn't say, and there are more of these. What he says is, there's no law against them. Two different lists. One, he says, and there's a lot more after this list. I'm just naming a few. But after the good list, he goes, there's no law on this one. And we've been talking about the law and freedom. We've been talking about the flesh and the spirit for the last 6 or 8 weeks. And I want us today to look at that. Now, how do we do this? Because we go, there's no law to legislate our morality. There's no law against this. In other words, if you don't love, is there a law against that? If you don't have joy, is there a law against that? If you murder, there is a law against that. But if you don't have joy, you don't have peace, you don't have love, there's no law against it. How does it work? Well, it's interesting. I was with a few friends a few weeks ago. They're sitting here today. And we were talking about a lot of things. And we're sitting at a table at lunchtime, and as we were sitting there, they asked me to do a couple of things. And so I didn't have my phone with me to, you know, just type it out. And so I took a napkin, and I love writing on napkins. Do you ever write on napkins? I love writing on napkins. I'm a big fan of napkins. And because there's a whole theory that you have to be able to tell your story on a napkin. And if it can't be told on a napkin, it's too big a story. There's all that. So I'm writing on the napkin the instructions that I was going to speak at an event, and they wanted me, giving me some things they wanted me to say in it. So I'm writing it down, and at the end, one of the guys said, I got a story about a napkin at lunch. And so I said, tell me, I love napkins. And he said these words. He said, I sold a piece of property to a man, and it wasn't a house, it was just a commercial piece of property, and I took the mortgage, and he stopped paying me. So in other words, you know, the man wasn't a bank, so how do you foreclose? There was all these problems. So he brought the man in, and they had lunch together. And so my friend said to him, you've stopped paying. And he goes, I'll pay you. I'll pay you. And so my friend said, how will you pay me? He said, I'll pay you this much this month, this much next month, this month the following month, and over a period of months, it would be paid off. And so my friend took a napkin and said, would you repeat that? On this month, you'll pay this, and I just want to make sure I'm correct at what you're saying. So he wrote it all down, and then my friend said to the gentleman, what if you don't do that, what you just said you would do? He goes, I'll give you the property back. So he said, he writes down, I'll give you the property back if I don't pay the above statement. On a napkin. And so he hands the napkin to the gentleman. He goes, is this what you just said, that you'll pay this and this and this, and if you don't pay, you'll give me the property back? It's on a little white napkin. And the guy goes, yes, that's exactly what I said. He goes, well, why don't we just sign the napkin so I know that's exactly what you said? So the guy signed the napkin, he signed the napkin, they put a date on it, the guy, my friend, put it in his pocket, and as the story goes, as we know, obviously he didn't pay. So my friend came back and said, here's the napkin, you said you would pay. He goes, you can't legislate me on a napkin. He goes, but you gave me your word. You gave me, if I can use this word, your integrity, your character, your morality. He goes, but I just put it on a napkin. He goes, it doesn't matter. Your integrity is worth more than the napkin, isn't it? And he goes, I'm not going to pay you. So my friend is very resourceful. He took the napkin to his attorney and said, I have a deal with this gentleman, and here it is on the napkin. The attorney took the napkin to a judge, and the man had to pay him. The man didn't pay him, so my friend got the property back. You see, our word is more than the napkin. And some of us have this sense of that our word means nothing because it's not, I didn't legalize it. And we have this sense that integrity and what is legal, what is moral and what is legal are equal, but in this country they are not equal. People say, well, as long as I don't break the law, I have not sinned against God. Can I just say that's no longer true? That may have been true 100 years ago, but it is not true now because you can break the law of God or the virtues that God has called us, and there is no law in this country that stops that. Because there's not enough laws that we could create to stop everyone from sinning. So the purpose of Galatians is to tell us that we should do what is right, not do what is the law. Because we even see that now. So in the earlier parts it said, be circumcised, be kosher, be this, be that, and you'll do what is right. But it didn't talk about the sins of the heart. It didn't talk about the sins of the mind. It didn't talk about those things that God has called us to. So today, he begins to explain what he means. So let's turn to Galatians chapter 5, verse 16 and following. And you see this combination of the works of the flesh with the fruit of the Spirit. The works of the flesh with the fruit of the Spirit. Let's continue with this. We'll talk about the works of the flesh for a minute, but what is the fruit of the Spirit? And as you look at these two, you realize that the works are plural and the fruit is singular. Have you ever noticed that? The works of the flesh are plural. The work or the fruit of the Spirit is singular. And he uses these words to describe the fruit of the Spirit. He says, and we'll read it in just a minute, walk in the Spirit, be led in the Spirit, have the fruit of the Spirit. And that word have means birth out the fruit of the Spirit, which we'll look at in a minute as love, joy, peace, patience, etc. We are to have that birthed in our lives. And then he says, live in the Spirit in this passage. And then he says, keep in step with the Spirit. Now, what he doesn't say is list these nine things and hope you can keep one or two of them. Let's hope we can have a little love and joy. And then next month, let's work on peace. And then next month, the following, let's work on self-control, and then the next month, let's work on some faithfulness, and the next month, let's be good and goodness, and the next month, let's be kind. He's kind of saying that either you got it or you don't. It's a combined. Now, you don't have to sin all 15 sins, but when you do the virtues, they come in a package. Let's look at them. Galatians 5, verse 16, but I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. Even desires is plural. So he's talking about everything is plural when it comes to the wrong way, and it's singular when it comes to the right way. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do. Excuse me, so there's something going on here where God has called you to walk in the Spirit and there are things that are blocking your way. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. We've talked about that for 6 straight weeks, so I won't go into that anymore. But you have a choice, either be led by the law, be led by the works, or be led by the Spirit. And you go, wow, it'll still be easy. Let me be led by the Spirit. Well, you're going to find out that being led by the Spirit is harder than being led by the works of the law. Because there is no law over that. He holds us to a higher standard. We've titled this whole thing freedom or being free, and being free is harder than not being free because you have to do what is right even when someone is not there to check up on you. Nobody can check up on your heart. Nobody can check up on your mind. Nobody can check up on you when you're driving and there's no policeman on the road. Nobody can check on you every time you write a check for your company. Nobody can check on you every time the cash box is there and you have that ability, those of you who work with cash in your company. Nobody can check on you every time. So you've got to live by a higher standard. So he goes, verse 19, now the works of the flesh are evident, sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. That's where he keeps going. I'm just going to stop, he says, but I could keep listing out things. And he stops there. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom. Now let's look at these and look at the groupings of them. The groupings are this. First of all, there are sensual sins, either sins of adultery, the sexual sins, and he lists several of them. We've got young people in this, younger children in here, so I'm not going to go into great detail of what all the sexual sins are. In other lists, he lists other sexual sins, but to understand that there is a great way to have sex. Sex is not sin, but there are sins that can be attached to sexuality. We must understand that. Our country doesn't get that today, by the way. And I'm not making a political statement, I'm making a theological statement. Our country doesn't get that there is a right and a wrong when it comes to sexuality. And if I can just say it very clearly, sex remains in marriage. Between one woman and one man. I don't need to say the rest because the list is infinite of the amount of variations to that. So just sex is in marriage between one man and one woman. And all the variations around that are not biblical. And I know that's not a great thing to say in front of people these days, but I gotta say it because it's been there from the book of Genesis to the book of Revelation. There's one thing in the Bible, many things in the Bible that do not change. I mean, you know, they change foods, they may change dress, they may change different times of worship, and sometimes they change, little things like that change. But this is not changing. God's view of sexuality. He started it. That wasn't that robust, by the way. So, but understand, do not be afraid, O Christian, to share the truth. We'll look at that in a minute. Now there are other sins. I use the word superstitious. That's not a modern word, but he talks about sins of idolatry and sorcery. These are sins of religion. There are religious sins that can go on. And this isn't very happy these days either, because nowadays we all feel in this country that as long as you just have some belief, it's okay. Well, some beliefs are wrong. Some beliefs are actually sinful. And they had some idolatry. If you're going to worship something other than God, that is sin. Just call it what it is. That's from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. So he mentions just a couple of them. He doesn't mention them all. Then he mentions social sins. Those are sins between people. Those are the sins of jealousy, anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, and envy. Now, you may say, I don't do rivalries and I don't do heavy dissensions, but all of us have issues. Is there jealousy? And he ends with envy. It's kind of interesting. Paul talks about envy a lot. And I think it's because envy is an issue that is cross-cultural. It is there a lot. And then he talks about sins of addiction. We have this sense that addiction is something that's very modern, that's post-World War II. Oksana just mentioned an addiction. that that person had in drinking, over drinking, drunkenness, and the results of drunkenness, which lead to fits of anger, which leads to potentially could lead to other things like beatings and things like that. But there are an awful lot of addictions back in the olden days, addictions to drugs, addictions to other things as well. And he mentions a couple. He uses the general word of drunkenness and orgies. And orgies were things that people got together. They could be sexual orgies. They could be using drugs. They had opium back then. They had heroin back then. They didn't call it that. It wasn't processed the way it's processed, but they had those drugs and other herbal drugs that would cause hallucinations and things. And of course, they had strong liquor as well. And the drunkenness would turn into orgies when you would do it together. And he's saying this is a work of the flesh or a sin. So he lists these out, and pretty much this is a good categorical listing of sins. And I would venture to say when you sin and when I sin, we sin inside one of these. Back to addiction just for a minute. I believe each of us have sins that are harder to overcome than other sins. And each of us have different ones than the person sitting next to you. And that's why I don't stand up here and just speak against one sin. Because I could stand up here and speak against drunkenness. It was brought up earlier, and I could point and say, don't be drunk and don't do that, because I don't struggle with drunkenness. I've never had a drink of liquor in my life. I just don't drink. I don't like it. I don't like what it does to people. I don't do it. So I could sit here and say, don't be drunk, don't be a drunk. But what is that? I have other sins. See, what I would be doing is separating me, making it sound like, wow, don't be drunk. Well, I have other sins that I've got to work with, besetting sins. And so I don't know what your sin of choice is. Some of you, it might be the sins of the heart, anger, bitterness, jealousy, envy, coveting. Some may be the sins of the mouth, a harsh word, sarcasm, etc. Some may be outward sins like the others I've mentioned. I don't know what it is, but God wants to deal with it, and we'll look at how to deal with that a little later. Then at the end of the passage, if I could skip forward to verse 26 for a moment, because we're on these sins. Let us not become conceited. Let us not provoke one another. And then he says, let us not envy one another. He brings that envy back. This is why whenever you read about Paul in Acts and you read in the epistles, he is always beating people down on envy. Envy is when I want something you have. I wish I had what you had. I envy what you have. And that must be a sin because that it perplexes all of us, like pride, which is a sin that has covered everybody. If you don't have the sin of pride, you're lying, because everybody has that sin. But envy must be in there too. And work through that. Now, let's look at the positive side, and we'll kind of bring it together. The positive side starts in verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, fruitfulness, gentleness, self-control. There's nine there. Against such things, there is no law. Now, let's put these in some categories. The first three, they're in triplets. You don't think so when you look at it, but the first three point towards God. Because ultimately, God is the one who can give you true love. He loved us before we loved him. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself because of God's love to us. It's an incredible thing. If love emanates only from my heart, it's going to be pretty small. If I love you out of my heart, it's going to be small. If I love you because of what God has done for me and the blessings God has given me and all those things, and I love you, it's going to be a far more tremendous, larger love. It's a Godward love. Joy is the same thing. In joy, in joy comes the understanding of what God has given us. It's the opposite of envy, really. It's kind of a counterpoint to envy, is joy. You have an incredible joy in your life because you understand what God has given you and you're excited about that and what he is doing in it, even if you feel it's not perfect. And then inside of that also is peace. Peace is not the absence of war. We're not talking about peace with another country. We're not talking about peace between tribal units. That is peace. We're talking about the peace that comes that passes all understanding, which is the peace that comes from God. It is no conflict with God, a relationship with God that brings peace. I do a lot of teaching on peace, and most peace is just peacekeeping. We love to keep the peace. I use the example of two boys, and I don't use my own sons. I had two sons when they were younger because they really didn't do this too much. But when boys are younger and they're fighting each other, I could easily grab one shoulder of one and pull them off, grab the other shoulder, and they would have peace, wouldn't they? Well, no, they wouldn't have peace. They would just have no conflict at that moment because dad, the bigger person, pulls them apart. There's an example in our world nowadays of someone who does it. It's the United Nations. I mean, I'm not making a comment on the good or the bad of the United Nations, but the United Nations goes into a country or a region and they come in with such firepower that they stop the conflict because they have bigger guns than everybody else has. Like I have a bigger gun, these two arms, than my two little boys have. I can pull them apart, but here's the problem. Little boys turn into big boys. And if the only way I created peace with my two little boys was my personal strength and not their inner strength, then I have done nothing but postpone conflict in the end. Because when they get bigger than dad and they're still fighting each other, they will fight each other because dad can no longer pull them apart. My two boys are much bigger than me, stronger than me, more capable than me. That's not peace. Peace is an internal thing that comes from God that indwells us. And we teach a lot about the peace that passes all understanding. So that's the first one, Godward. Love, joy, peace. The second one is outward. That's to you and me. Patience, kindness, and goodness. Now, goodness, we're not talking about just being good, just the act of good, just sitting there not doing any evil. These are proactive terms. Again, this goodness is not, well, I'm not sinning, so I must be good. No, it's doing good. It's being good. It's being a part of people's lives. Patience. Does anybody struggle with impatience? Oh, come on. How about kindness? Kindness is acting upon someone else over your own good and doing it. Of course, we know what goodness is. It's doing good things for people. These are the outward manifestations of fruit. Now, what's interesting is, and I'll get to the third one in a minute, but as you look at these two, he doesn't say these are the fruits of the Spirit. Again, I hope I have patience, and I'm just going to want to have patience of the nine. No, he says, I'm going to give it all to you. I want you to have all nine simultaneously. Maybe you won't be mature in it, but I'm going to give it all to you. It's like a fruit salad. My daughter, who's working in the children's ministry today, used to say when she was a little girl, she goes, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, but wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. So, I mean, even she understood what a fruit salad was. You know, there's no tomatoes up here, but it's a fruit salad that comes. So he wants us to have love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and goodness all at the same time. Now, this is a big job for God to do in our life because we like jealousy, envy, sarcasm, a little anger, a little rage, maybe an occasional drunkenness, maybe an occasional indiscretion, maybe, right? And so we know what we like. Now, the third area is inward. So we have Godward, outward, and inward. faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. This comes specifically out of you. And this is the tough one. And he leaves it to the end because it's like, for all of us, the toughest, self-control. God has called us not just to love, not just to joy, not just to peace, but ultimately all the way down to self-control. The faithfulness is not just faith in God, but it's, sorry, there should be an H in there, faithfulness. It's the faithfulness of a friend. It's the faithfulness of God to God. It's just the whole concept of being faithful. There's being faith in God, which is very specific. It's the more general. It's a fruit of being faithful, gentle. Has anybody ever accused you of being gentle? That's a great accusation. Be gentle. And then having self-control, which is the toughest one of all. Now, and then he goes on and he says, and those, go back to the scripture, verse 24, and those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. He takes the picture of Christ himself's crucifixion and says, that's where all these bad things in the previous verses, up the page a little, should go. They should die. So that you can have joy, love, peace, etc., and not the other things. Hard to do, easy to say. So can I give you three things, and I want you to write these three things down. Three things to help us in developing good character. And when we talk about character, you can use the word integrity. You can use the word character. You can use whatever word, being a good Christian, whatever word you want to do. The first is this, and it's key. And when I talk to people and I say, why did you do that sin? Because people come to me and go, I sinned about such and such. I go, how did it happen? And many times they go to a point in time, a very specific point in time, where they made the wrong decision. Self-control and some of these other things require us to be strong in the moment of choice. Be strong in the moment of choice, or the decision, or the crisis. Young people and older people. So this has nothing to do with age, but we always think it's young. Some of the biggest infidelity in the state of Florida occurs in retirement villages. Do you realize that? Some of the biggest STDs, sexually transmitted disease issues, are in retirement villages. Go, I don't get it, but it is. There is a choice that comes when someone propositions you. There is a choice that comes when you think of being the propositioner. And when that temptation comes either out of your heart or from someone else, you have a point of decision. Well, I love them. They're nice people. They're whatever. There is a point of decision. That is the point to have self-control. If you struggle with certain sins, there's decisions that you need to make ahead of time. Don't go, it's interesting. I don't do this too often, but I can sit in a bar. Now, as a pastor, I don't do it. But I can sit in a bar and look at all those bottles, and guess what? I don't even know what they mean. I don't study them. I don't know the difference between a vodka and a rum and a this and a that. I have no idea. I can sit there and have my sandwich and not a problem. But I bring a person in there who struggles with that, it's a whole different game. So at the point of choice, at the point of decision, be strong. Don't say, oh, I'll figure it out tomorrow. I'll figure it out next week. Be strong in that point. Number two, stand up and speak out when you see something that is not right. There's nothing wrong with saying, this is not right. this is not right. I remember my father told me it would happen to me, and I didn't believe him. I was 21 years old. I went into business, and he said, you're going to be propositioned with a bribe one day. I go, Dad, I'm 21. Who's going to bribe me? He goes, just wait and see. Someone's going to bribe you. I'm in business. He said, you will be bribed. Attempted bribery. I go, no way. He goes, you need to make a decision now. Now. I said, I'm 21, Dad. Who's going to bribe me? I have no money. I have no influence. I have nothing. He says, someday you will have money. Someday you will have influence, and someone's going to bribe you. And the day came at Einstein Bagels. And if I told you the name of the person, you would recognize, many of you would recognize his name. When he said, I'm going to give you a check if you vote on the board I was on at the airport authority. If you vote this way, I will give you the check. And then he saw me about to speak, and he said these words. He said, I know you won't take it, so I'll give it to your church. He wanted to buy me off a vote for money for this church. And I looked at him, and I stood. I didn't physically stand, but I looked at him and said, I am contacting the FBI because what you have just done is wrong. There is a point. I could have said, let me think about it, so I could think about it. I wasn't going to take the money, but you just have to, at some point, stand up once in a while. Young people, if someone propositions you to go to bed with them, stand up and say no. Don't say, I'll think about it. Don't think. Somebody propositions you with doing something that is illegal, whatever it is, just say no. I'm telling you, early on, stand up and say it's wrong. Because, and they may laugh, they may this, they may that, but it's a lot easier then than down the road. And how many people have I talked to? I've done a lot of prison ministry in my life where I ask these questions. Why did you do it? Because, not because they were inherently bad people. We are all inherently bad, so why are they there and I'm here? Because they didn't stand up at the point of choice. And I'm telling you, just stand up at the point of choice and either say it's right, I'm going to do it, or it's wrong and I'm not going to do it. That's it. Number three, and finally, guard your heart, because it's out of the heart that many of these sins come. Because, by the way, our church needed the money. Why not take the money? It was a vote. It didn't really matter if I voted yes or no. I had an opinion that I should vote no. He wanted me to vote yes, obviously. But boy, if I had voted yes, our church would have had a pile of money. You know, that's a good thing, isn't it? Well, it's not. I had to guard my heart, and every day you have to guard your heart, people, because the sins begin in the heart. They move up to the head before they ever get to the hands. Just understand that when the sin has gotten to the hands or to the mouth, they've already been in the heart and they've already been in the head. Why don't you stop them? We're all trying to stop the sins at the hands. Why don't we stop the sins at the heart, or at least at the head? Then we don't have to quite worry as much with the hands and the mouth. And that's how you do it. Two ways of doing it. I don't have time to go into them. Hedges. Hedge off the bad things and make avenues of the good things. The things that God has called you to do, make it broader. And the things that God has called you not to do, make it smaller. I was down meeting our missionaries. Half our missions group was in Panama this week. So right after church last Sunday, I got on a plane, flew to Panama, met with 50 of our missionaries. It was the most cool thing. In 2 days, I was able to do a year's worth of work. Well, at the end of Tuesday afternoon, I said, I'm in Panama. I got to see the Panama Canal, right? Got to see the canal. So we drove across the isthmus about an hour to the Gatun Locks. It was amazing. It's fascinating. Some of you have been through them on boats. I had not. Well, they're building bigger locks because there are bigger boats. They're widening the locks on the Panama Canal because bigger super tankers can go through them with the container ships. We need to widen some things. and make them broader, but there's some other things we need to make smaller. So look at that in your own life. If you want some discussion, we're going to be looking at this starting in April on Wednesday nights for 5 or 6 weeks called Church Lead. We're going to be looking at specifically how to walk in the Spirit and not in the flesh. It's a 6-week study. We'll be talking about it in a couple of weeks. So sign up for that. It's during our Wednesday night study. Our time is up. Let me close with a thought here. Bring this together. In the 1850s, there was a painter in Germany who was not a famous painter to me. His name was August Moritz Rech. August Moritz Rech. He painted a painting of two people playing chess. Now, for those who don't know about chess, the board game chess, the object of the game of chess is to capture the king. There's a king, a queen, some knights, some rooks, some pawns, they're all there, and bishops, etc. I love playing chess. I'm not very good at it, but I enjoy playing it. I love watching it being played. It's a great game. But when you capture the king, the game is over. So it's a simple thing. Capture the king, you win. Well, he painted a picture of these two men. Let me show you this picture if we can put it up. Now, you can't see it very well. If you can put it on the bigger screen, if you can make it a little bigger. It's a picture of the devil playing chess with a man. And the title of this painting is Checkmate. Checkmate. The devil has checkmated. Checkmate means you can't move, and the next move, you're going to kill the king. And you go, checkmate, because I now win. And the devil has just played, taken one of the pieces, and he has checkmated this man. And you see this man, he's leaning over, and he realizes it's a metaphor for the Satan taking his soul, because he has got his soul. It's a picture of Faust, of Dorian Gray, whatever you want to look at, but the devil has beaten the man, and he's taken his king. That's the title of this. Well, this painting was taken on a tour of the United States back in the 1880s. It still exists. It was just sold in 1999 into a private collection by Christie's. But in 1888, it was on tour in several places. One was Richmond, Virginia. And it was on tour in a little museum. And a couple of men went to it. And one of the men was a chess master. His name was Paul Morphy. Paul Morphy was a chess master. He's looking at this painting, and his friends are there, and they want to move on. Who wants to look at Satan so long? So they move along. He says, I have to look at this painting. So he looks at the painting, and he says, something is wrong with this painting. He goes, there's something wrong with the painting. He says, I'm going to stay back. You guys go ahead. I'll catch up with you later. And he looked at the chessboard, and he realized that the king of this man, not devil, the man's king was not checkmated. And in fact, if the king was moved one space, he would checkmate the devil. And he screams out, this guy, you know, he's obviously a nerd, he screams out, the king has one more move. The king has one more move. And as I read that this week, I realized, looking at this, that some of you have been consumed by the devil. You've been consumed by sin. You've been consumed by addictions, by sexual sins, by bad theology, by bad social sins. I don't know what your sin is, but you have been, in your thinking, checkmated by your sins. There is nothing you can do to get out of it. And I want you to know that the king has one more move. And he can come to you. And he can checkmate the devil. But you got to let the king the master make the move. He's looking there saying, I have lost it all. I have lost my soul. Let me tell you, friends, you have not lost your soul. If you allow the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords to control your life, and let him do it. Because I have talked to so many people who said, I can't do it. And can I just tell you, you're right, you can't do it. It is God who gives you the fruit. It is not me who gives you the fruit, and it is certainly not you who gives yourself the fruit. It is God who gives you the fruit. But you got to believe in him. And if you've walked in here discouraged because of addiction, sexual sin, you name whatever sin of choice you have, and you feel you're checkmated out of getting it right, you can only turn to one place, because you can't turn to yourself. You have to turn to God and his son, Jesus Christ. And if you walk out of here and forget everything I've said or what was sung or the communion we had or the fellowship we had, remember this, God is on your side. God is on your side. Let him take the pieces and move them the way he wants to move them. And then see what happens. Let's pray together.